Hello and welcome to A History of Hannibal, Episode 3, Meet the Romans, Part 2. As important as the Roman Constitution is, and as much as is known about the Senate and the Republic, all the different offices, it is the Roman Legion that has entered our collective consciousness. This will be our main topic for today. We shall look at who fought and how they fought. We'll also take a look at Roman religion and the geography of the Mediterranean, with particular attention given to Italy. In the period that we will be studying, Rome fought using the maniple system. It had previously used other systems, such as the famous phalanx formation, in which soldiers would stand side by side, forming a shield wall with long pikes jutting out of it. The phalanx was highly effective and spread across the Mediterranean, but it eventually fell out of favour with the Romans. The phalanx was well suited to the plains of Latium, but not so much to the hills of Samnium. You see, while it is near impossible to penetrate a phalanx is as good as destroyed if it is attacked from the flanks. The military term for the side of the army is the flank, or the rear. This is because the troops are packed together so tightly that they cannot turn to face the oncoming danger. I think you can see the problem. It is very hard for a phalanx to keep its shape on uneven ground. If a gap appears in the line, the enemy can swarm into it and eat the phalanx from the inside. As the Romans expanded into the hills of central Italy to fight the Samnite Wars, it soon became clear to them that they could not continue to use the phalanx, and so they morphed their forces into what became the maniple system, something we shall examine in detail. The reason why we call the maniple system the maniple system is because the basic unit in the army was, yes, you guessed it, the maniple. A maniple consisted of 120 men, usually with 40 men across and 3 ranks. The standard formation was to deploy the maniples in 3 rows in a checkerboard formation, the second row filling in the gaps in the first row, and the back row filling the gaps in the second row. The first row of maniples is made up of the Hastati. The 10 Hastati maniples were the youngest and least experienced men in the army. They were formally armed with a spear called a Hastai, which gives its name to the unit, but by this period they were armed with swords and 2 pila, pilum in the singular, as well as the usual shield and armour. A pilum was a javelin, which would be thrown shortly before engagement to disrupt the enemy line. The iron behind the tip would famously bend when it struck, meaning that if the pilum hit an enemy shield, it would be very hard to remove it from the shield, making it useless. Behind the Hastati were 10 maniples of Principes. The Principes were older and more experienced than the youthful Hastati. They were equipped with the same weaponry and defences as the Hastati, and were used if the Hastati were unable to break the enemy. Behind the Principes were the final line, the Triarii. There were 10 maniples of Triarii, but only 60 men in each maniple. They were the veterans. If the other two lines couldn't defeat the enemy, they would be brought in to save the day. There is in fact a Latin motto, Rem ad Triarius residie. It has come to the Triarii, showing an act of desperation. The Triarii were, in a way, remnants of the old phalanx system, and fought like a phalanx using the 2-metre Hastai, though, unlike the Greek round shield, the hoplon, the triarii used a large, rectangular, semi-cylindrical shield, known as the scuta, scutum in the singular. When you picture in your mind a Roman legionary, the shield they are using is the scutum. Other key aspects of the army were the velites, who appeared during our period from the earlier leves. They were essentially skirmishers, the poorest and the youngest men, who were lightly armed and screened the Roman formation. Screening being the military term for stopping the enemy seeing your formation. There was also the cavalry. The Romans were not the best cavalrymen, being drawn from the rich equestrians. Although, over time, they became just the officers, and the first class of the five classes of the Comitia Centuriata provided the cavalry. There is little evidence for the Roman cavalry, but certainly they were at least armed with swords. So, that is a Roman legion. 1,200 Hastati, 1,200 Principes, 600 Triarii, 1,200 Velites, and 300 cavalry. There were the normal officers of a Roman army, the centurions and the military tribunes. At least early on, the consul would normally lead two legions into battle, but over time, the number of legions grew. Legionaries would be drawn from the propertied classes, enrolled in the Comitia Centuriata, usually small farmers, though allies would also provide troops. And that is the Roman army. They would become a Roman navy during the First Punic War, but that is for later. All you really need to know about naval tactics is that it involved ramming the opponent. Classy. And that is the Roman military. I'll now go on to Roman religion. Most of you will know a lot about Roman religion. The replication of the Greek pantheon, Jupiter for Zeus, Neptune for Poseidon, Pluto for Hades, etc., etc. I shall not be going into all that. There are more important things to be looking at. Certain aspects of Roman religion. The first of which are the Sibylline books. A Sibyl was a priestess who prophesied at certain holy sites. The sayings of these various Sibyls were collected into what is known as the Sibylline books, created in the 6th century BC. Supposedly, King Tarquinius bought them off the Cumaean Sibyl. The story goes that the Sibyl offered 9 books of prophecies to Tarquinius, but he refused due to the excessive price of the books. The Sibyl then burned 3 books, and offered him the remaining 6 for the same price. He refused again. The Sibyl burned 3 more of the books, and Tarquinius finally bought the last 3 books for the full price of the 9. The predictions were very vague, similar in fact to Nostradamus. They would be consulted during emergencies, such as the problem of Hannibal, but we'll deal with that in time. One other aspect of Roman religion I'd like to introduce is something called the evocatio. It derives from the verb evoco, I call away, and it was the act of calling away another nation's god. When the Romans were about to defeat and destroy another state, they would call upon the god of the state to abandon it, as the Romans would honour the god instead. There are a few instances of it during the Republic. Juno Regina, Juno the Queen, was taken from Veii during the siege of that city. This will be again mentioned at some point in the podcast. I find it very interesting. I would now like to go into the geography of the ancient Mediterranean. I'll start with Italy, and then go clockwise around the Mediterranean, before finishing with an in-depth look at Italy. If you check out the website, you should be able to find a map of the Mediterranean and of Italy. This may be a bit basic to some of you, but I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page. In the centre of the Mediterranean, you have Italy, bordered on the east by the Adriatic Sea. On the other side of the Adriatic is Illyria. This region currently hosts the former Yugoslavian countries of Bosnia and Herzegovina, Croatia, Serbia, Montenegro, etc. To the south, where Albania is currently located, we have Epirus. Northern modern Greece is where Macedonia was located, and south of that is what the ancients knew as Greece. Thessaly in the north, going south through Boeotia, into Attica and the Peloponnese. Still moving east, we have the Aegean, then modern Turkey. Asia Minor. The ancient eastern Mediterranean is quite easy to work out when comparing it to the modern one. The large regions being Syria, Cyprus, Judea, and Egypt. Not forgetting the coastal region of Phoenicia. The eastern Mediterranean was dominated between Macedon, based in Macedonia, the Seleucid Empire, based in Syria, and Egypt, based in, well, Egypt. As we move across North Africa, you have Cyrene in modern eastern Libya. The rest of North Africa was dominated by Carthage, based in modern Tunisia. Numidia was also quite a powerful state, based in modern Algeria. As you move into modern Morocco, that was Mauritania. In Spain we have the Iberian tribes, the Celtic tribes, and the Celtiberians, while in modern France, Switzerland, and northern Italy, we have the Celts, or the Gauls. There are also the larger islands, Corsica, Sardinia, and Sicily. Now, Italy. In North Italy, we have the Po Valley. As we move down the spine of Italy, we have Etruria in modern Tuscany. And then more inland, we have Umbria, and then Picenum on the Adriatic coast. Further south, there is Latium, which of course contains Rome. Carrying on down the coast, we get to Campania, by modern Naples. And then inland, to the Adriatic, is Samnium. Moving down the Adriatic coast is Apulia, and then there is the heel of Italy, which is Calabria. South of Campania, and west of Apulia, is Lucania, with Bruttium in the toe of Italy. By the First Punic War, Rome had control of all of central Italy and had just subjugated the Greeks in southern Italy, the region known as Magna Graecia. When the Greeks colonised southern Italy around 700 BC, they saw it as a bigger version of Greece, giving it the name Magna Graecia, Greater Greece. The Romans had not entered the Po Valley at this stage, which was still controlled by the Gauls. And that is a whistle-stop tour of the ancient Mediterranean. If you like the show, why not like us on Facebook at facebook.com/thehistoryofpodcast. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/thehistoryofpod. Subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/thehistoryofpodcast. Check out the website for maps along with other things, thehistoryofpodcast.blogspot.com. And if you have any questions for me, send me an email at thehistoryofpodcast@gmail.com. Join me next time, when we finally get into some history. We will bring the Romans up to speed by having an overview of their history up to the start of the First Punic War. Then, the week after, we can look at the other great power in our tale, Carthage.